The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Saint Matthew. Glory to you, O Lord. At that time, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman of that district came and called out, "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But Jesus did not say a word in answer to her. Jesus' disciples came and asked him, "Send her away, for she keeps calling out after us." He said in reply, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But the woman came and did Jesus homage, saying, "Lord, help me." He said in reply, "It is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Please, Lord, for even the dogs eat the scraps that fall from the table of their masters." Then Jesus said to her in reply, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And the woman's daughter was healed from that hour. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. It was what we call the pastoral year, the internship year as a seminarian. I was assigned to a parish in Richmond when Bishop DiLorenzo was first settling into our diocese. He'd been installed after being the Bishop of Honolulu, and while we all thought this was a downgrade from the tropical islands and beautiful weather, Bishop DiLorenzo landed in Richmond and never looked back. He fell instantly in love with our diocese. He was a lover of our history, of our parishes, and of our people. For those of you who have been in the diocese since he started here, or who have been for a confirmation or another celebration, or when he's come to pray with our community, you know that many of the homilies and the stories, especially in his early years as a bishop, they all came from stories he had read about in the rich history of the Commonwealth, finding connections between his hero Abraham Lincoln and the life of the Catholic believer, even bringing in stories of war heroes we've never heard of, even after a lifetime in Virginia. So when the bishop began making his rounds and visiting the various parishes of the diocese, I was a ready seminarian in Richmond. But over time, he began to ask me on occasion to drive him to events or masses or even visits up to the seminaries in Washington and in Baltimore. And I was a 28-year-old man at the time, but I was still completely nervous to drive him around, feeling like a junior officer invited to drive a 3-star to his next appointment. I served as his master of ceremonies for many of those early masses, and I'd started to figure him out. I knew what mattered to him in the liturgy and which details he wasn't so concerned about. I came to know his love for teaching and for the truths of the church, his passion for the unborn and for his priests and for the people of God. But I remember there was this one moment where I saw into the heart of the bishop for the first time. We were at a special mass being celebrated in Richmond for people with special needs, many with Down's syndrome or autism on the scale or some other emotional struggle. And I saw that he was nervous before the mass began. He was a little unsure of himself in this new environment. I was really worried he was going to try to preach about a civil war battle at this mass and it wouldn't go well. But he didn't. He spoke articulately in that mass about Jesus as friend. And the message challenged me as much as anyone else in that room, and I still remember that homily 12 years later. But at the end of that mass, just as the communion line had finished, we sat down and there was a hymn of reflection being sung. And I looked over at the bishop. Typically, this would be when I would see if he wanted a drink of water or if everything was set for the closing prayer, or he would ask me if there were any announcements. So I looked over to make sure we were ready to go, and I looked over and the bishop was sitting in his chair with his eyes closed as the communion hymn was sung and tears rolling down his cheeks. He was 63 years old at the time, and he was moved to tears at the beauty of the people he was called to lead as shepherd. In that moment, I saw the heart of a man to whom I knew without any reservation I could pledge my respect and obedience. And even in the times when obedience was hard, I never looked back. Today, the church in Richmond mourns the loss of our local shepherd, the one who was called through the power of the Holy Spirit to lead and guide us in the ways of faith. But when we turn to the readings for this Sunday, I believe there is a connection for us. I believe there's an invitation to how we live as Catholic Christians, an appropriate response to the sudden death of our shepherd. See, since the moment of the very first bishops of our church, those first apostles chosen by Christ, the bishops have had three specific roles in the life of our church: to teach, to govern, and to sanctify. That by their teaching authority, beginning thousands of years ago, they have held the Catholic Church in faithfulness to what Christ instituted and the truths that have been safeguarded by their teaching, all the way up even to Bishop DiLorenzo, the one we mourn right now. Through the governance of these same bishops, churches and schools, hospitals and apostolates and ministries have been erected around the world, literally anywhere that land has been, they have gone, so that the teachings of the church can continue to lead all people to the promise of heaven. And then, of course, the most important work of sanctification, most especially through the Holy Eucharist that's celebrated, through confirming new Catholics or initiating them, or through the incredible mercy of absolving sins. These works begin first with the diocesan bishop, who is to be the shepherd who never allows his flock to be left alone or without a path to walk. It is through the power of our bishop that the priests are given the ability to do these same works in our parishes and in our apostolates around the diocese. This all makes sense in light of the scriptures that we have for this 20th Sunday in ordinary time. In Isaiah, we hear the sense of the prophet governing over the people who are called by God so that the house of God can become a house for all people who are willing to trust in the covenants and structures that have been placed before them. St. Paul writes to the Romans in our second reading, and he encourages them to listen to the teaching of God so that the Gentiles will know God's radical love is open to them if they will be willing to hear this radical and new truth that is being proclaimed and taught to them. To govern and to teach, these roles of a bishop are indeed the gifts of God for the people of God, even when sometimes they are the roles we least see in our bishop. They are so incredibly important for we who are Catholic. But in the gospel, I think we see the most profound offering of Jesus himself, the invitation of the people to be sanctified, to be made holy. In our gospel today, Jesus can appear to be harsh or dismissive. It can seem as if we hear this story of Jesus and that he is disinterested in the life of this woman who has approached him. At first, she appears to be ignored when she cries out to Jesus as the Son of David. Then she appears to be dismissed when he does not stop to pay attention to her. Then Jesus even seems to go to the point of insulting her, comparing her to the dogs who do not deserve the table scraps. But then, if we are willing to see with the eyes of faith, there is this pivotal moment where something different happens. Jesus wasn't seeking to insult the woman or to dismiss her or even to avoid the work of sanctifying, of healing her. Rather, Jesus was wanting to do the work of his Father in his Father's time and choosing carefully how to reveal himself as the very Son of God so that his persecution would not be too early and his work not be allowed to continue. He knew what he would face, and he was doing it in the Father's time. Jesus is waiting for this moment. It did something incredible, something we sometimes miss, but that matters to us. See, Jesus' patience and his trust in the Father's plan allowed the Canaanite woman an opportunity to come to faith in him. It allowed for a time to stay faithful to God's plan, to decide in that moment that she wanted not only for her daughter to be delivered, but for her own heart to be healed as well. Jesus' action allowed the woman to make a decision for faith, and thus her daughter to be healed of a demon, but for them both to be sanctified and to become followers of Jesus. This incredible encounter is what truly changes the woman's life, not just the healing of her daughter. Jesus was not dispensing some magic potion or just working wonders. He was changing lives. And this is the work of the one who was the source of all sanctification, of all holiness, of all healing. So think then for a moment in your own life. What do you need from Jesus and from his church for you this week to be taught or to be governed or, most importantly, to be sanctified, to be made holy, to be healed? Where do you need to approach the Lord and trust in his path and his plan for your life right now if it seems a little off or a little rocky? See, rarely do we look at the gift of the church in governance and teaching, but these are powerful ways that we encounter the love of God. And often we know we need the sense of being sanctified, of healing, of being made holy, of making a decision to live completely for Jesus. But rarely do we actually allow it to cause us to live differently. So if that is you, consider this an invitation to recognize the gift of God that he wants to work in your life. Consider this the moment where Jesus is not ignoring your request or looking the other way at your plea or dismissing you in your time of need, but instead inviting you to make a decision in faith to be healed and to follow him so that he truly is the source of everything in your life. When Bishop DiLorenzo was ordained a bishop, like all of the thousands and thousands of bishops who have gone before him, he chose for himself an episcopal motto, a bishop's motto of how he would choose to live his life as a bishop of the church. And his was simple and direct: Christ, our hope. It was the ever-present reminder that in his work as a bishop, in his effort to do the teaching and the governing and the sanctifying work of Jesus for the church in Richmond, it was above and over all that Jesus Christ was the hope of salvation for every person. And that becomes our invitation this week. In the face of mourning the loss of our bishop, or in the struggles that you might face even greater this week, Christ, our hope. In the place of darkness that you are experiencing, or in the questions that tug at your heart, or in the separation that's going to happen in your family, or in the moments where you aren't sure if God is listening to you, Christ, our hope. In the places and ways where you get to see the beauty of God in the created life around you, or in the family or friends, or in these final moments of vacation or time together with those you love, or in the gift of new life among you, or in the quiet ways that God works miracles for you, Christ our hope. In the moment where you step out to watch a miracle that seems to be happening before you in the lives of the people around you, Christ our hope. Tomorrow, as you step out along with most of our nation to look at an eclipse and see what's happening before us, where the sun and the moon do not seem to be in order, yet God's marvelous work is at hand, Christ our hope. The invitation of every one of us is to cling to the reality of Jesus Christ our hope, and by that to have our lives changed and to be healed. See, the reality is that in the sad times and in the celebrations, in the moments where we feel a little empty or things just aren't right, it is still Christ, our hope. In the Eucharistic prayer that I will offer, where no name of a bishop is said, for the first time in my priesthood, Christ, our hope. And that means that whatever we experience, in the joys and in the sorrows and in everything in between in our life, we cling to that deep and strong reality that Jesus Christ, in the plan of his Father and in absolute faithfulness and submission, has taught us that we can cling to him as the source of our everything. Our invitation is to see in the moments that God calls us to unity, or the place where he teaches us how to live and love, or in the ways that we know we need healing and new strength, that we cling to the one who is always before us, and the one who will always be Lord over us. He is Christ, our hope, and he is everything for us.